Well, thank you everyone for coming out. Well, I'm Andrew, I'm with the Asheville DSA.
Hi, I'm Katrina, I'm also with Asheville DSA, which is, in case any of you didn't know, is Democratic Socialists of America. And welcome to our 2017 City Council Candidate Forum. We're gonna go through and have each of the candidates introduce themselves, and then we're gonna go through and ask a bunch of questions, and then there'll be time open to anyone who's here in the audience to ask any additional questions. And at the end, anyone who's a member of BSA will be voting to potentially endorse one of the candidates here.
Just one?
Just one. Yeah. So, yes, we'll get started with introductions.
My name is Rich Lee. I used to live over here in West Asheville. I ran in this election 2 years ago and was the top vote getter that didn't win. I ran then on a platform of increasing affordable housing in the city of Asheville, growing our local economy and our local job base, and on promoting social equity and social justice. And in the 2 years since that election, those issues haven't really changed. Just in my, from my perspective, they just seem to have come to a little bit more of a head. We have as much trouble with working artists, the service industry workers, finding a place in the city as we've ever had. We have a lot of development contributing to issues with traffic and stormwater, flooding, and things like that. So I'm giving it another go. I hope I'm really looking forward to substantive debate on the issues tonight, and I'm excited to see where this conversation goes. So thank you guys so much.
Hi, I'm Cecil Botwell. Been on city council for two terms now, 7 3/4 years or whatever it is. I am beyond argument the greenest member of city council. I'm the person who pushed for the blue, big blue recycling. I'm the person who pushed for the LED streetlights that are saving us $365,000 a year in electric bills. I'm pushing for more efficient vehicles. The issues that matter to me are affordability, and I think that we're approaching affordable housing the wrong way in the city right now. I think we'd be better off to put our money into transit and providing free transit to everyone, and even beyond the city limits. So I've been talking to the county commissioners about that, to help people get to their jobs, to reduce parking demand, to reduce emissions from commuting. There's a lot of benefits to free transit. Other cities have done it, and we can do that. I'm in favor of greening the city, continually greening the city. I have been one of the strongest, maybe the strongest advocate for a park across from the Basilica. But more than that, I've been the liaison to the Tree Commission for 7 years, and we're working to try to find ways to not lose more trees, more tree canopy in the city. And I've been working for you, for the people of the city, for these years. I'm willing to continue if y'all want me to continue. It's been an interesting battle. During my first years on council, I was often the single vote out. In the last couple of years, since the 2015 election, I've got allies on council. We can do better about development here. We can do better for the people of the city and do less for the hoteliers and developers. Thank you for listening.
I think we checked it out.
Yeah. Hello. Maybe not.
I'm not sure it's working.
My name is Shanika Smith. I'm a fourth generation native of Asheville. I left Asheville in... I'll go without. I left Asheville in 1996 to pursue education and then a career and family. My plan was never to return home to Asheville. But in 2011, circumstances brought me back to Asheville And when I returned to Asheville, it was bittersweet. Spent a lot of time in our central business district and noticed that Asheville had changed a lot. Economically, we were more advanced than most cities in Western North Carolina, but our community development was very poor. I noticed that the social institutions here were very much strained over the years, and the social institution of my interest is the family unit. I started an organization called Date My City because I noticed that people of color in the city weren't visible, and to me, we were being ignored. So I came out with a vision, with voice, and a strong commitment to remind Asheville that we are still here, we have vision, we have power, and we matter. I decided to run for city council because I see a lot of things happening on the ground floor. I see a lot happening, a lot of movement. And movement, in order for it to be capitalized, it needs political will and commitment. And I come with political will and commitment. I didn't think I would be here on this side of the political discourse, but I'm glad I am. I'm a learner. I'm ready to learn. I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to work. I have no permanent enemies, and I have no permanent friends. I have permanent interests, and I'm ready to work with whomever in order to push our city forward, our elderly, our youth, people of color, and our working class. So I'm looking forward to this process.
Thank you, everybody. My name is Dee Williams. I'm a native of Asheville. Let me just say that I grew up here, raised by my grandmother, and one of the things that I know very well, as an orphan, by the way, my older brother and I know the two horsemen that usually ride together are poverty and ignorance, because that's how I pretty much grew up. And let me just tell you one thing about poverty and ignorance. It will imbue you with a lot of attributes. And the first attribute it gave me was a wishbone. That wishbone made me go after 3 degrees. I hold one in accounting, another in business administration, and another in political economics. Let me also say that not only that, once I got the degree, it gave me the wishbone instinct, also gave me the instinct to open up a construction company. I employed 22 people building highways, roadways, concrete construction, the many streets in this city are a product of D. Williams and Company, Inc., the construction division. Let me also say this. There's not another candidate here who has the civic track record that I do beyond being elected. I went to Mission Hospital. I summoned them to a community center, their most senior people, and I asked them to remove the box off their applications. It took me a year. That box for nonviolent felons was removed, and it impacted 10,000 jobs in 9 counties. And while they were at it, I also asked them to pay everybody a living wage coming into the door, and they did. So I want to tell you that. The other thing is that folks talk about affordable housing, but one of the things that we did was that we collected data, and we also lobbied the city of Asheville to allow us to set up a trust fund, a permanent community land trust. We also lobbied Buncombe County Commissioners, and we do have funding for the operational component of that for Southside. Folks talk about social equity. Pardon me for standing up, but I want to see all of you, and I want you to see me. I want you to know my heart. I want you to know my will, and I want you to know that it takes something of a categorical denouement. Immanuel Kant, the great ethics philosopher, talked about that force which drives us. I want to let you know that that is what drives me. We talk about social justice, but I am the person who got the first contract for an African American from the Asheville City government. Let me also say that we just got a couple of folks certified, and we use data points to bring the city of Asheville into accountability for spending $262.50 with black contractors in fiscal year 2015. There's a lot that needs to be done, but one of the things that we need done is we need investment in our local people, we need investment in dedicated streams to fund our infrastructure, and the source of pollution is CO2, and we need a land use plan and a transit system that really does work. And I look forward to your questions, and I also look forward to my wrap-up, because I want to ask for your vote, and DSA, I need your endorsement, and I need your work. We need to get this message out and get elected. Thank you much.
My name is Kim Rohde. I am your neighbor here in West Asheville. I'm a piano teacher, service industry worker, friend, and activist. I, with my husband Nathaniel in the back, donated our car to charity 9 years ago in an effort to decrease our dependency on fossil fuels. So we walk, bike, bus, and he skateboards. I wouldn't dare. I'm a founding member of 103.3 Asheville FM, the radio station down the street. I served there as a station manager for 3 years. It was an unpaid position at the time. So I was volunteering 30 to 50 hours a week because I believe in the community voices and in independent media. I started a show called the AFM News Hour with a group of friends and started covering the city council meetings in 2015. So I've been to every city council meeting except for two since January of 2015. What I've seen is it is time for more courageous leadership if we're going to sift through the processes and really, truly address affordability and putting the people's voice in front of decision-making around the development, childhood care, and education, and our families and future. And now is the time more than ever for us to build community from within, which means we need to get real about racial equity and social justice issues as we address the budget, police funds use, and environmental policy. And I'll just take a moment to say, para mi vecinos que hablar español, me llamo es Kim Rohde, soy un candidata, or candidata, para el Consejo de la Ciudad de Asheville este año. Soy un estudiante de español, pero tengo más información en inglés y en español aquí. Gracias.
If you forgive me, I won't stand. I have arthritic knees. As you can see, I'm the grandma of the group. My name is Jan Howard Kubinek. 30 years I've lived in my old home, the Kenilworth community, past president of residents associations, board member numerous times, part of the beginnings of the CAN, Coalition of Asheville Neighborhoods, CAN, First Pedestrian Awareness Task Force. I think I lived in city council chambers during the first unified development ordinance. That's when we all took turns staying there so that somebody always had eyes on the ordinance. I'm a former guardian ad litem, a retired school teacher. I'm running for city council because I can look around my neighborhood. I'm on Bowcatcher Mountain still. I have so much growth going so rapidly. I see so many problems with no answers, with not even the questions being put out there. So that's why I'm running. There's polarization, there's rising cost of everything. There seems to be this pitter-patter about affordable housing, which I don't think we should even be talking. We should be putting the brakes on the advertising to send the entire globe here. Yeah. Something, it's not like we can just say, okay, we're going to give away, we're going to build $50 million homes, and you know, we've got to put the brakes on the constant advertising, the being everything to everyone in the world. You know, we need to do something for our residents, people who live here. So that's the only thing. Houses in my neighborhood now are $1 million, people. Do you think a school teacher was gonna buy in there? Well, I couldn't begin to buy a home there now. So that's what I'm about. Infrastructure as past president of the neighborhood, I actually crawled around in the storm drains and the sewer lines, checking them out when we had work crews out there. And that was, you know, that was 30 years ago, guys. So my only agenda is the welfare of this community. And as you probably saw in the newspaper, that I ran in 2003 and 2005, I refused PAC money because I was just running to get the word out there. And now, nobody's going to offer Jan any money while she's saying don't grow. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. We're going to get on to the question part of the evening, and Andrew and I...
Can we do without the microphone?
Yes, if necessary. Andrew and I are going to take turns
this
asking
questions. This one wasn't sound check, that's why people show up so well.
But it was
off.
It was off
their chair.
I just bought that today, sorry.
Like a,
can you tap it, maybe?
Yeah, it's working
out. Okay, and each of you has 2 minutes to answer the questions, and I'll just give, we've got 30 seconds left. I'll just wave my hand around to give you a clue for that. Does that work for everyone? Great.
All right. Do you consider yourself to be a socialist, and what does that mean to you?
Yes, I do. To me, it means governments providing a robust network of social services and social goods. I think you can see from the success of Bernie Sanders' primary campaign in the city of Asheville, where he won something like 80-85% of the votes, that that's not a controversial opinion in the city of Asheville. We're looking for enhanced bus service. We're looking for enhanced public housing and places that people can enjoy the outdoors. And we're looking for a government that is a champion in relieving inequity and narrowing the gap between the people that are doing best in society and the people that are struggling or falling behind in society. In all those senses, yes, I'm a socialist.
Yeah, I'm a socialist, clearly, and I have been for my entire political life, which goes back into the 60s, I guess, late 60s. It seems to me that we establish governments to provide for the benefit of all the people. And the governments that have worked best for the people across the planet have been democratic socialist governments. Places like Germany, where workers are on the boards of all the corporations, and there are limits on the differential between the CEOs and the workers. We need to get there in this country. We were actually much closer to that in my childhood in the 1950s, when we had around 95% marginal tax rate, and we actually had a lot of people going to college for free in this country. We can afford free college for everyone. Harry Truman tried to push for universal health care, and today, thankfully, Bernie Sanders entered the bill for universal Medicare. We can do that. I was a huge supporter of Bernie Sanders in the primary and was really pleased with the turnout here in Buncombe County, and I frankly expect him to win in 2020. Democratic socialism is really what we all profess to practice in most of our religions. And most of our club activities and everything, we talk about everyone doing things together for the benefit of all. And that's all it amounts to.
30 seconds.
Okay, and so that's where I am, and that's where I remain and will be.
To answer the question, yes. I'm a preacher's kid, and, you know, there's a golden rule there, but what I'd like to mention most of all is I learned the lessons of feeding sheep. And being amongst people, making sure that everybody has equal access and everybody is herded towards the best resources. And I think that takes leadership, but it also takes what we call servant leadership, to be amongst the people and to understand the needs of the people. I'm in the community daily with my organization, Date My City, and even with the work that I do with Green Opportunities, we provide job training for community members who are underemployed or unemployed. A lot of them already have skills, but we try to expose them to skills that are more comparable to the industries in Asheville. So I would call myself a socialist, and those are just a few reasons why. I believe that people should have access to food and access to learning opportunities. I believe our young people should have access to early childhood education and universal education at that. So I do consider myself a socialist, and I like to be among the people. And clearly here in Asheville, we have a disgusting wealth gap where there are clear winners and clear losers.
30 seconds.
should I say, clear beneficiaries and those who are outcast.
Thank you. Yes, I am. Let me just say that everybody should have health care. Everybody should have affordable housing, a decent place to live. Everybody should be able to breathe clean air that's not full of toxins. Everybody should have access to an education not owe $100,000 when you get done. And everybody has a right to not be shot down by the police department because you're of color or because you love somebody or you look a certain way. And I just don't talk the talk, I walk the walk. We organized and got data from the Southern Coalition of Social Justice in which we asked the police department to stop stopping black drivers. We have demonstrated data to show that. And so it's more than just talking. You've got to have a backbone to be able not only to talk about it, but to be about it. You've got to come out with the information that you have that you know is right. We're all ethical people, all good people. I'm not saying that we're not, but there are a few of us who can carry that from here to there. Okay, so that's why we're here. We cannot talk about this, but very few of us, even though we've served in elected capacities, we still have the same problems here in Asheville. We're still talking about them, and it's too much to keep talking. It's time to begin working and delivering tangible goals. And I'm tired of seeing our people suffer and work low-wage slave labor jobs, and then the rest of the people have to support them through the winter when they get laid off. There are certain basic truths that we need to tell each other, and we need to stop paying lip service, and we need to get to work, and we need to hold our elected officials accountable.
I'm a long-time registered independent because I'm an anti-war advocate, anti-war at home, anti-war abroad, anti-war on drugs, anti-war against people of color through the criminal justice system. I do believe in democratized ownership and what that means for the workers when you don't have corporate control by a few at the very top. I share socialist values around wage, workers' rights, access to health care, education, and housing as a human right. And I do believe that it's time for us to represent people and planet over profit and party, which is why I'm asking folks to come together right now and address issues and dismantle systems of oppression so we can start building a resilient community together.
I'm unaffiliated, have probably been unaffiliated my entire life. I think I'm a militant moderate. As far as socialism, I was raised in Indiana, we had a Socialist Workers' Party. And the unions actually raised me, so I was kind of surprised that there's this big push now to get, you know, to represent this. Like, where did it go? And, yeah, the people's rights, of course. Now, how are we going to bring down GE or Boeing, Linamar? I mean, it's not going to happen. So we're not working, the city government is not working to that goal. What we need to do is make sure that the people who live here are provided the needs and the services that they deserve. Now, our educational system, as a retired school teacher, I really would get in there and demand that the children of poverty get an equal, fair education. This has been a problem forever, and it's just pushed under the rug. And as far as the social justice thing, this didn't look good on a resume, but does anybody remember the Black Panther Party? I was actually Black Panther bodyguard in the 60s. We got out, we rallied, we had to stop that group that's always mentioned. There were threats on Keith Parker's life. He was our student body president. So a lot of us had been around that block.
30 seconds. Next question, what is the biggest issue facing our Asheville community and how would you address it?
So I have a feeling a lot of us are going to say the same thing about affordability and the wage crisis in Asheville, but to me, I would sum that all up in one word, and that is the diversity of people in Asheville is under threat. Asheville is losing black population, losing its population of color. Compared to times that I've come here, you are seeing, when I came here 20 years ago, you could rent an apartment on Charlotte Street for $200. The idea now that you could get anywhere close to that as a service industry worker making the wages that you make in a downtown restaurant or something now, it's just unbelievable. And my great fear for Asheville is that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we're going to look around and we're going to say, where did the artists and the volunteers and the organizers go? Where did the retirees go? Because half of Buncombe County is at or above retirement age already. And they struggle with the cost of living here too. Where did the interesting people? And if we look around in 5 or 10 years and it is a middle to upper middle class, white, affluent city without any kind of diversity of people, we're really going to rue what we've lost here.
I have to agree that we're all going to probably agree on the core issues, but I don't think we all agree on how to address it. Having been on council now for over 7 years, I've watched what we've tried to do toward affordable housing, and it isn't working. We're getting a very tiny amount of affordable housing for a very large investment. Now, part of the money we get is federal money that is dedicated to affordable housing, and I think we should continue to use that. But the truth of the, I'm not sure we should continue to use local tax money for affordable housing, and here's why. What's happened historically is, following World War II, when industry switched over from building tanks and airplanes to building cars, and we put people on the GI Bill and educated them, there was a boom in America, and we experienced what was known as white flight, because largely white people were able to afford to move out of cities to the suburbs. And cities collapsed, downtowns collapsed. We saw, like Asheville, when I moved here 38 years ago, there were a lot of plywood storefronts downtown because there was nothing happening downtown, and it was largely a racial divide. And then around the turn of the century, around 2000, money began to rediscover downtowns. And so money has bid up the value of downtowns across the country. This is not an Asheville phenomenon, although Asheville has boomed like mad. And so affordable housing has migrated outside the city. Now, I don't like that idea. I don't advocate that, but to me, the thing we need to do is put our money into affordable transit, to put park and rides out there in the county, to make transit free, to let people get to work on a cheap basis to reduce the cost of their commuting. That really affects affordability, and it's something that's within the reach of the city to do. Thank you.
The largest problem facing Asheville is de facto segregation. We don't really talk about it much because there is little representation around segregation, the idea and how it affects us structurally, but I think we see it throughout a lot of our systems. And it is induced by the policies that we create. We often talk about the academic disparities, and I think that education policy is housing policy. When we shore up on housing and making sure that there's access for people of color and people who are low income, then I think we'll see better outcomes across the board. So how would I address it? A lot of times you have to address it first off by coming to a consensus about what the leading issues are. And sounds pretty fundamental, but I think just having agreement across the board is the foundation to making impactful changes.
And so basically, it's not even about race. It's about who's got the money. It's about poverty. Okay? People don't care if you're black or white. If you're poor, you're relegated to the same destiny. Okay, we're going to be very matter-of-factual. I want y'all to talk straight to me because I'm going to talk straight to you all the time. That's the only way to do it. One of the things that we need to do is invest in local businesses. We need to develop a supply chain. These folks need to quit going outside of Asheville and writing RFPs to suit outside companies. If anybody's written an RFP, you know you can write it to the guy down the street. Okay? That's called a responsive bid. And we can show them how to do it. I'm willing to train. Okay. So there were black people downtown in the 70s. I was downtown. I had two nightclubs. I always owned something. I always hustled dollars. I'm going to be very frank. It's been illegal, but I was making money. Okay? I was on the block. I had a place on the block. And I had a place right across from First Union National Bank, 85 Patton Avenue. As a matter of fact, I guess we had to retain a couple of lawyers and had to go to city council to get that spot down there, but we got it. So it was about money, who had the money even then. Let me also say that a supplier council is something we need to do from a regional basis. The education gap is based on poverty. Almost everybody who's in public school here and the city council appoints a school board, most of these children are on free lunches. So it still goes back to poverty. So we've got an affordability issue. I told you I was working on a community land trust. The city council needs to start writing RFPs so that these affordable housing units sunset, okay? So I'm happy to help. I'm happy to train.
I've been thinking a lot today about how I was going to say affordability and not just say affordability, but I think it's affordability in relation to gentrification. We're building affordable housing in the name of, or we're making our housing less affordable through increases in property tax. I just got my property tax bill, and that's going to significantly impact the 51% of the city that's renters. So we're going to have to do courageous work around housing. That's going to include land trust, land banking, limited equity, cooperative ownership. But I also realize that we need to stand up to the development we don't want so we can stand up for the development policies that we do want. And as a representative on the transit committee, I'm advocating every day for folks who use the bus. I've been advocating for fare free transit to join cities in North Carolina like Boone and Chapel Hill that realize that fare free transit may actually save the city of Asheville money. When we ran the system for free for 3 months in 2006, ridership increased by 60%. A lot of folks rode the bus for the first time. I was one of the people who rode the bus for the first time. So what we know that that would have a positive impact on the environment. It's a more environmentally friendly way to commute. We know that it's access to jobs, housing, groceries, education, childcare. But we also know that it'll have a positive impact on parking and traffic downtown. So I would suggest that we use parking funds to further subsidize the transit system. And we also need to make the service hours run later because we need to make affordability a real serious point for the people who live here so that we're not pushing people out into the country.
Once again, this is all of these are intertwined, all these issues. We cannot, at this current rate of development, expect any type of affordability. Now, the transit issues, as long as we keep piling people into town, with our crumbling infrastructure, with no plan to fix it. Where's the maintenance going? What's happened to our budget? I know I was at City Council last night listening to that. All of these issues need to be addressed. We need to slow down the advertising for the constant influx. Basically, real estate investment trusts are taking over downtown now. So you know they're not going to buy those buildings and then rent them out cheaper. They're in the business of making money off land. Another part that Dee talks about. So the embedded poverty. Yes, working in juvenile court as a guardian ad litem, it's horrific. And not few of those issues are being addressed. So my story on it. And what would I do? I would direct our city manager to put the brakes on some stuff. We have a city manager. We pay him well.
He's hiring me.
We are going to switch it up and start. We're going to alternate sides for answering the questions just to give everyone a chance at going first. And so we're going to start at the. You'll be the first to answer.
Okay.
Next question we have 18%. Can everyone hear me? Okay. 18% of all traffic stops in Asheville involve black drivers, despite black people making up only 13% of the population. Black drivers are 100% more likely to be searched than white drivers. What would you do as a local elected official to repair our policing and criminal justice system?
Wow. I know I went before city council and I spoke for the federal interjurisdictional task force because I live in an ultra-high crime neighborhood. And I feel like, I know everybody hates the police, but if you watch some of the things that go on in my neighborhood, and then if you're in juvenile court, you realize that we actually need a police department. Now, what or why it got so unequal, I don't really say that I can address that one. I know that the cases that I've been involved in, I can't even refer to, so there's a lot going on there. I think Dee and her people and the African American community and the peoples of color now have come out and are making it an issue. So surely it, you know, that will help address it.
I feel like Dee should address this before I should. Watching what I've seen happen in our own community, I am embarrassed that I saw an officer on camera push down a teenager in Hillcrest. I'm infuriated that I saw three teenage brothers the age of my piano students in the Montford neighborhood with an AR-15 assault rifle brought because they thought they might have a BB gun and they could use the power of their words and their position and as an officer with all the tools that they have. So we have a lot of work to do in our community around training and with measurables for accountability. But Asheville City Council missed an opportunity when presented data by Ian Mance that was gathered by folks like Dee Williams and the NAACP and Patrick Conant to adopt policy. I watched the presentation during the City Council and it said, what should we do? Policy suggestions, number four, that cities across the state are using to make an impact to close the racial bias in traffic stops like the next day. And we did punt it back to public safety, but we did nothing in the end. So that's a serious concern. We need courageous leaders who can do better.
And you can. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been my pleasure to, just because I'm African American, one of the things that we did was we went and formed a coalition. NAACP tasked me, they came to me. First of all, it's a national initiative with the National Office of the NAACP. The Asheville office had not started this initiative. So a couple of people that I worked with on Ban the Box came to me and said, let's use some of the techniques and the data collection. I'm a data-oriented person anyway. So I went to Code for Asheville, Code for America, and I said, well, there's a database with the Southern Coalition for Social Justice that's been set up with the North Carolina Department of Justice. So rather than point fingers, we wanted to depersonalize it, we wanted to use data. So that was the first point that we started with. One of the things that we have to understand is you have a city like Asheville that's never been made accountable for this kind of data. It's never ever been collected, and it's never ever before now been marshaled by citizens like me, okay? So when you start bringing folks into accountability who are not used to it, they rail, okay? So we all have implicit bias. So that's the thing that we need, know that we all need to deal with. Police officers are no different. We don't hate the police. That's our police department. We just want it to be a world-class, fair police department, and we want folks on both sides, civilians and police, to go home every day. So one of the recommendations that we had was regulatory stops, just cut them out to cut down on encounters, written consent, and there were some others. But I'm happy to discuss with you. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. I think the question shows that Asheville or someone in Asheville is getting real about the race issue. What we have here is a couple of missed opportunities from Asheville. One of the issues, maybe a year ago, when a young man was shot down in Beaverview, and the use of excessive force, but because we justified his murder, we lost out on the opportunity to really talk about use of force and the means to de-escalate situations, but it was kind of brushed under the rug. Number two, we have the reforms that Dee Williams proposed. It's so unfortunate that when community members come up with reforms that are doable and pragmatic, because we have a city attorney, we put those reforms up against the city attorney, so therefore, very practical things that come from the community that can help the community and the economic disparities that are attached to our criminal justice system, instead of really taking it into perspective and showing some type of favor for the community people, your reforms have to be defensible by law. I think that's injustice, and I think we all need to come together and really have these conversations about how we rate reforms and reform suggestions.
I think it's easy for people who've come lately to the table to argue that they have picked up the ball that someone else dropped. But I started in 2009 when I ran for council the first time, advocating to make Asheville a sanctuary city. It took me 4 years of meetings with Latino groups, with NAACP, with church groups around the town, with the ACLU, with the with groups in Washington, D.C., and talking to council members in other cities that had become sanctuary cities, to fashion a civil liberties resolution that took me 4 years to get through the city council. And finally, in 2013, 7-0, we passed that. And that was advocating the idea that Asheville employees would not discriminate based on race, gender identification, ethnicity, place of national origin, et cetera, and et cetera. That's, you can find it on the city website. Go look for it. I mean, I did that because I believe in that. I've been fighting for that right along. As chair of the city of the Public Safety Committee in the last couple of years, I've been pushing for improvements in our police behavior. There is implicit bias, as Dee pointed out. I mean, that's true. That's true in all of us. Those of us who've gone through building bridges, I've done it 2.5 times, have exposed in ourselves deep-seated biases that we didn't even know were there, but we're working on it. And during my time on public safety, we have created, thanks again to participation from the NAACP and others, the strongest use of force policy in the country that is now being used as a model across the United States. So Asheville has not been slack on this. We're addressing something that's deeply seated. Yes, there's deeply seated racism. Anyone who denies that is nuts, but we've been working on that. We've been working on it hard, and we're going to continue to do that. Thank you.
So, first of all, I'm a percentages person, and when they say 13% of the population of Asheville is black, but 18% of police stops are black drivers, that's already, if you're not clear on it, that's already half again more likely to be stopped if you're a black driver. But second, that probably understates the problem. Because think about it, that's only black drivers. And the black population of Asheville is more likely to be walkers and transit riders. So you've actually got even fewer black drivers on the road than their population as a whole. That's before you even count the tens of thousands of tourists and commuters coming into the city every day, too. So when we say you're half again more likely to get stopped as a black driver in Asheville, it's actually probably more like twice as likely or three times as likely to get stopped. And that's a real issue. I mean, it's a shame. It's a damn shame. It's a blot on any claim that we have as a city to be a progressive and tolerant place. And so the question was, what can we do about it? And I think the very first thing we have to do is come together as a community and really agree that this is not something that can be allowed to stand. There needs to be parity between black stops and white stops. And we know it's not a safety issue because when they search white drivers, they're more likely to find contraband or an outstanding warrant on them than the black drivers. So we need to acknowledge the problem. That's not totally happened. The city police department made some strides in their report to council on this. We need constant ongoing bias training. We need to address the economic issues that isolates black population of Asheville and communities of property. We need to get rid of bad cops because I think Ian Mance said in Greensboro they found that half of the disparity between black and white searches was just one or two officers. So we need to have some flexibility to get rid of bad ones.
Awesome. Thank you. All right, and we'll start off with Kim for this one. Should local law enforcement continue to participate in the federal investigations as a part of the war on drugs?
Absolutely not. The federal war on drugs was designed to funnel people of color into the industrialized prison complex. I do realize that we are going to have training for the APD to collaborate with local efforts to address the opioid epidemic.
All right, thank you so much. I debated with Ben Scales, the high sheriff of Buncombe County, about marijuana, and Debate Society said we won that debate handily at Asheville High. But let me also say that H.R. Haldeman, with Richard Nixon, set this up to, like he said, control those blacks who are uncontrollable and so forth. So you're talking about a war that's contrived and also failed that uses a lot of money that feeds the prison industrial complex. So I would not advocate that they participate at all. Let me also back up just a moment and say that I am heartily encouraged with our progress with the Asheville Police Department. I'm the type of worker who never gives up. I never give out. And I always have hope. And I'm working with a lot of young people who are watching my attitude about it, okay? We're going to win. And we're in this for the long haul. The chief is coming around and they're making some revisions and changes, and I'm heartened. And just stand by. We're going to do some things. We're going to be getting GIS coordinates as to where these folks will stop. We've opened that up, and some other dialogue and technological advancements. So I just wanted to say that. It's not done. I'm all in. We're all in no matter what. Thank you.
I don't really know how to answer the question completely. I think it's kind of loaded here. The war on drugs, we know, beginning with Nixon's administration, was really meant to vilify the anti-war left and the black empowerment movement. And then it moved down through different administrations, such as the Reagan administration, where, you know, he had zero tolerance. And then his wife came along with just say no, you know? And what it did, it just made it acceptable to kick in doors and arrest a lot of political leaders who are on the ground floor, and it created this political hysteria where every administration can run this thing, this agenda, this propaganda about we need to stop the war on drugs. You know, like a lot of races, they pick this one issue and it drives people to home run. But we have a lot of things we have to deal with, and I think number one, with the epidemics that we have in our city, heroin and opiate epidemics, I think that a federal investigation needs to be had, but not without a conversation about health-based reform. Then I also believe that we need to work on decriminalizing drug use, decriminalizing marijuana usage, and then bail reform as well.
I have for several years advocated that we follow the lead of Portugal and legalize drug use, period. What they found there by legalizing personal use, although they still have enforcement rules about sale, addiction has gone down, treatment has gone up, use has gone down, and crime associated with drugs has gone down. Because when drugs are legal and cheap, nobody is stealing for that. I mean, think how many people steal to buy cigarettes these days? Not very many, and they're as addictive as heroin. I was really heartened in conversation with the president of the Mission Hospitals when he pointed out that finally they're beginning to address the opioid epidemic at the place where it's starting, which is with prescription drugs. For too many years, doctors were trained in hospital, in medical school, that more is better with opiates. And he even said, Ron Paulus said, one of the problems is that the doctors don't want to be called at 3 a.m. because somebody's feeling pain. So they give people more pills than they need. A friend of mine recently had a surgery on his pinky, and he was given, he's a city employee, and he was given a pile of pills. He took one and threw away the rest of them. He didn't need them. But people often take those pills. The dentists in America are now organizing to stop prescribing as many opiates because that's where the heroin addiction problem is starting. So I really think legalizing, of course we can't do that at the city level, but I have pushed and pushed over the years I've been on council to ask police chiefs, five police chiefs since I've been on council, to de-escalate on at least marijuana arrests. We don't need to be doing that. Thank you.
I have this terrible problem as a candidate of answering the question that was asked. And the question was, should local police support federal investigations into the war on drugs? And I honestly don't know what I don't know what kind of cooperation there is between the local police and federal investigators. But I do know that people are arrested in Asheville every day for things that are legal just a half day's drive away. And I know that in those states, black people are sitting in jail or federal prison for things that were criminalized when they did them that now white businessmen are allowed to profit from. That's something that needs to be addressed. But here in the city of Asheville, what worries me is I've got this friend who was doing a river cleanup down at a homeless camp down by the river, and they pulled up 2 5-gallon buckets of heroin syringes. It's just unbelievable. There was a guy on the NPR as I was driving over here that was saying he was for the legalization of every kind of drug until the heroin epidemic started, and now he's just not sure. And the police, when they walk into those camps, have a lot of discretion to let people be. They give them 7 days to clear out of the property. They give them a list of resources and help getting to places that they need to do. We need more care-based approaches and more compassionate, humane approaches that help people get resources rather than feeding them into a pipeline that's going to have prison at the other end of it. I support those efforts to do it. I'm scared by heroin. That's not a war on drugs. It's a war for our lives and our kids.
No, I don't support the war on drugs. Wasn't that a facet of the Vietnam War where we were bringing home, soldiers who were bringing home dead bodies filled with, So, no, not the war on drugs. At the same time, though, the woman who was just stabbed 20 times, did you hear about that? That's in my yard, okay? That's in my yard. I watch this go on all the time. There is no police effort up there. There never will be. What else? Oh, as a guardian ad litem, I was the one who went into the projects when the shootouts were going on to make sure the babies weren't being used. And I would get frequent calls from my clients. Well, this is, there's another shootout. Why does it have to be the women and children, that are always put up and center on that? But yes, we have a drug problem. Also, do you all remember, were you here during the investigation of our evidence room when that was emptied out? Yeah. Okay, so where do we think our drugs went? Where do we think they came from? Where'd the money go? Okay, that's enough said. I live alone on a mountain, so.
Has become one of the most expensive places to live in America. What can the city do to reduce housing costs?
We'll start with Pete for this one.
One of the things that the city can do is what we're working on is a permanently affordable community land trust, affordability running with the land with a multiplicity of housing options, whether it's a co-op, just plain old apartment buildings, houses that will be for sale and just rental units, and also some mixed-use development in there so folks can work where they live at. The other thing that we can do is start paying people a living wage. Affordability is based on income. We all know that. I'm a real estate broker license as well. So we need to start paying our people. We need to stop inviting hoteliers and other people in here to pay our people subservient and slave labor wages, okay? These hoteliers also need to be made to pay into an affordable housing trust fund, okay? I've got requisite courage enough to negotiate, as it were, with these folks or train the development staff to do so, to put together a community benefits agreement. With that, it would be an affordable housing trust fund, an infrastructure fund that would feed transit, and a couple other things. Probably need to work with the county on that, since they'll benefit from some of the transit as well, that we might sequester some of the taxes from the hotel rooms and put that in so that we don't have to break the backs of the taxpayers to do it, okay? So that's another reason why I'm running for city council, is because somebody needs to take folks to table and tell them, you're not coming here using our people for slave labor wages, and then they don't have anywhere to live. You're going to help pay for it. You're going to pay them well, and you're also going to pay some investment funds in.
I think that we've given our growth and expansion to tourists, and tourists being converted into residents. And for that reason, we have now high value, high land value, which is sending our property tax way high. But I think now that, you know, since we're talking about density, we should give the density to the people. So I'm in favor of the density bonus, inclusionary zoning, rent controls. And we think back in the 80s when we had this crisis with housing, you know, a lot of developers resorted to cookie cutter housing. Because when you can produce a mass amount of housing, very low on, very, very high on production because the design was pretty easy. So not only are you providing housing for a multitude of people, but because it is so very low cost to produce and very easy on design, it gives work to our workforce.
Having examined affordable housing for 7 years now, I've got to say that it sounds great to say the city should provide affordable housing. It's not cheap. The city should demand a living wage. Well, the city pays a living wage to the city employees. We have no power to impose a living wage anywhere else. We can't force anyone. We can ask them. And if they come to us for a zoning variance, we can make that a condition. But unless they want a variance, we have no power over development. We didn't ask for hotels to come here. City Council has not asked any hotel to come here. That's way beyond our power to control. If you own private property that's zoned commercial, you can build what you want to build. In the time that I've been on council, we've had three level three things come before us. Now, that's partly because they changed, my fellow councilors over my vote changed the level three rules in 2010. So we've only approved three large projects, and that's the parking garage that the county's building across from the post office, and the remake of the BB&T building, that McKibben's doing, and the hospital development. So blaming council for having invited all this development is absolutely wrong. And for anyone to claim running for council that they can raise wages in the city by edict is wrong. We cannot impose wage rules on developers.
30 seconds.
It's just beyond our power. I think if you want to do those things, you should run for state government, because that's where those rules are made. The city of Asheville charter is held by the state of North Carolina. So don't pretend that we can do things we can't. We are a living wage employer. We employ people. And another thing, real quick, we can't demand that we contract only with local businesses. The state law says we have to take the lowest bid.
Okay.
So there.
Yeah. So I'm going to agree with Dee that it's a wage problem. You've got the price of housing up here. You've got wages down here. And you can close the gap by bringing down the price of housing. You see how well our efforts have done, and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars of subsidies to developers who are fairly profitable people and run fairly profitable businesses. You can see what it's accomplished. North Carolina, or Asheville's actually ranked the best city program for producing affordable housing in the state of North Carolina, which is unbelievable if you think about it. So we've tackled it from this end. We need to tackle it more from this end. We need to diversify the kinds of jobs we have here, make sure they're jobs that have professional career tracks and that lead to high wages. And I think we need to do it by growing businesses that already have a presence here, or industries that already have a presence here. I'm not a big fan of giving your tax dollars to a company like GE or Linamar to try to recruit them into the area. We got good entrepreneurs here, and we can grow wages from that end. I think we can there are ways we can insist on doing more business with local companies that use local employees, so that we can be a model of supporting wages here, and we have a lot of soft power as one of the biggest area employers to negotiate that with the other large employers in the area. And then I think we need to throw everything out there. We need some community land trust. We need development on city-owned land that the city controls wages on. We need to support small landlords who provide 10,000 of the 40,000 houses in Asheville for rent but don't have any kind of subsidy or any incentive, just tax bills that are going up. We need to incentivize and create a zero-interest lending bank for backyard and basement apartments, which we can do with affordable housing funds to get more small housing that fits in the city and that supports people that live here as well, instead of just supporting the rusty pulley homes. Oh, that's Damon.
Again, what are we addressing here? Developers, realtors, real estate investment trusts are owning and running the place now, and they intend to keep it bloating up forever as long as they're making money. We are an ATM machine for them. It's just come here and you're instant success and make money. Anywhere along, I pulled up the planning, or the steps in order to get a hotel. There's 9 steps from the time they contact City Hall to all the meetings, the plannings, and all of this. Anywhere in that process, we could discourage them. Doesn't City Council have the ability to say, oh gosh, Jeremy, we really don't think, you don't have any, he can do anything he wants? Okay.
That's a question. Private property rights are very clear in North Carolina, yes.
Well, then we need to zone, we need to decrease the density in our zoning so that we are nothing but a frenzy out there. This is, it's just completely out of control. So that's the way to start, moderate growth. I think City Council has started trying to do that. I think they're trying to calm down the huge hotels everywhere. But it needs to be done at every level. Just and not say stop advertising Asheville.
30 seconds.
Keep enough tourists coming so that everybody can have their breweries, all the shops are making money, and everybody's got their bikes and their greenways. But to keep growing exponentially.
But the question being, what would you do to lower housing costs, correct? When my husband Nathaniel and I moved here, we hoped to open up Harvest Records, and we found this really precious two-bedroom home for $700 a month, utilities included. And I talked to the girls who were renting it most recently that I know, and they were paying exactly double. $1,400 a month for the same space. And now they're considering leaving town. So when I think about what can we do, and I've been to the housing community development meetings, I've been to the regional housing consortium meetings where the 4 counties around Buncombe are looking at priorities. We're going to have to go all in. And it means land trusts, land banking, co-ops. But I think when I look at what we can do here in the state of North Carolina, I see the courageous leadership in Chapel Hill that on March 1st, 2011, passed an ordinance for inclusionary zoning, that they were going to make sure the development, when it was built, included affordable housing. So when I see the property going up on Hilliard, and it's labeled as affordable housing, and then a community leader in public comment stood up and said, what is the 30% AMI, or the 60% AMI? What is this affordable housing you're touting? And that it would be between $600 and $700 a month for a one-bedroom apartment without utilities. And the guests in the audience are something that I share. As an artist, musician, family, living on, making it work, trying as hard as we can on stagnant, unreliable wages in a tourist economy, I think we must do better. And part of that means having courageous leadership that will stand up to the development we don't want, so we can stand up for the development we do want. And one of the ways we can do that is by making our transit system work,